Hey everybody, and welcome to the show. I'm James, that's Katie, and that makes this the first ever 21st episode of Cloud Control. Welcome back, Kate. Hello.
Hey, it's nice to be back. I'm sorry, everyone. I'm struggling. I just finished Before Your Eyes, which we're going to talk about shortly, and I have not fully recovered from this experience.
Yeah.
So, please bear with me today.
Yeah, it's pretty funny because we were actually going to record this podcast last night when we were together. Mm-hmm. And as you might notice, if you're watching the video version, we are not together today. And it's because Kate hadn't quite been able to finish the game. And I was like, no, you know what? Before we talk about this one, I think it's worth getting to the end. And so here we are today, a few hours later, making it a backup podcast time, but it's going to be for a better conversation, I think.
Yeah, and I feel both thankful to you that you had me finish the game and tricked into having such a devastating morning.
All right, well, let's talk about Before Your Eyes. But just before we do that, I want to give everyone a lay of the land for the show today, because we are doing something just slightly different than our usual layout, because we're going to be watching the state of play about Final Fantasy 16 live on the episode to end the show today, which means we're changing the order of a few things. We're going to talk about Before Your Eyes. I've got another game I want to talk about after that. Then we'll talk about our listener mail question for the day, and then we'll watch the trailer together. So if that's something you want to do, you can stick around to the end and we can experience Final Fantasy 16 in all its glory together, everybody. Doesn't that sound nice? But before we get there, of course, it's time to talk about Before Your Eyes. And this is a very interesting game because it is, we played it through the Netflix mobile app, something I never thought I would use to play a video game, but here we are. And I was just scrolling through there, just looking what they had. And Before Your Eyes caught my eye, because I thought I heard of it before. And it turns out this game is a very, I guess it's like a niche thing. It was on Steam before, but it's got a very interesting mechanic. And maybe, Kate, if you want to let everyone know kind of what this game is, because it's just so unique.
Yeah, so throw away your Joy-Cons and your $85 controllers. Because Before Your Eyes, as alluded to in the title, you come built in with the controller, and this game progresses through blinking as the main mechanic. There is some moving your phone, to look around with some scrolling type movements, or using a little bit of the touchpad function on the phone, which I guess would probably be a mouse on computer. But the vast majority of the game is controlled through blinking, which seems bizarre. But it becomes such an integral mechanic to the game. And I guess it's up to everyone who's played it to decide if it is novelty or if it is mechanic that really enhances the experience. And that is, I think, kind of one of the core things that maybe we'll have to touch on with the game, but that is at least the selling point that stands out as being what's very unique about Before Your Eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's leveraging eye tracking technology is what it's doing. And I think one of the things about the game that you and I both had was a couple, varying levels of success with the eye tracking. Something that happens in the game, I guess you're sort of viewing these scenes of someone's life through their eyes, and there's different points where if you blink, it'll be like, oh, that memory's over, and you start the next one. But sometimes I had a few where it's like I didn't blink, but it didn't track it right, and so I had a few issues with that. But I think overall it actually worked pretty well for me. The blinking, you had a similar experience, right, with how it worked.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting because the game is not on a timer. It is kind of a story you're playing through, and the blinking is used kind of as if you'd click on something a lot of the time. But then there are moments, and the game does warn you about this with a little metronome symbol that pops up, that you are aware then the next time you blink, you are going to exit the scene you're currently in and you are going to progress to the next scene that the game has to offer. So it becomes almost this kind of tension of you're trying really hard not to blink because you don't want to exit the scene. You want to see what it fully has to offer. But at the same time, the more you try not to blink, the more your eyes really like need to. So like, it's almost like a push and pull of like, okay, you didn't blink in this scene, but now you like next scene, you might end mm-hmm. up having to progress it quicker because now your eyes are like desperate for that next blink. So, and it's not that extreme. Like you do have time in between where you can blink normally. Like you don't have to be like straining the entire time, but it puts an interesting kind of like it makes the scenes very fleeting because mm-hmm. they are not permanent. Like they're going to progress no matter what, because you don't have the ability to keep your eyes open forever. So when I first started playing the game, I found it a little bit frustrating a couple times where a scene would progress, but I know I didn't blink. It just tracked my eyes. Maybe I looked down a little bit and that registered as a blink. So at first, starting the first half of the game, I found that to be a little bit frustrating. But by the second half of the game, I almost kind of liked that it didn't work properly, because it tied in so perfectly with the like thesis of the game, in that moments are finite and that like you cannot like the game is like unfolding before your eyes and you are forced to continue moving on in time and space. And so when those moments were ripped away from me, it kind of, there was a turning point in the game where I, instead of being frustrated by that, I was like, yeah, that's kind of the point. And so I didn't mind. I think it would definitely be problematic if it didn't work to the extent where it worked like 90% of the time, which is what I experienced. But I wouldn't say like stress too much about it if it doesn't perfectly track as you're playing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's my experience too. And like you said, I guess we can get a bit into the structure of the game and how it works. And I think I've alluded to before, you're sort of reliving this person's memories of their life. And I think we're going to spoil a lot of this game in this conversation, because it's sort of hard to talk about it without spoiling it. But I guess we'll do our best. But as you're living through the scenes of this person's life, it is, I had the same experience of you, where I originally was trying to like see everything. You know, I was like holding my eyes open, like trying to make sure I stayed in the scene as long as possible. But I kind of relaxed on that after a while, because I was like, you know, there is something really grounding about missing out on what happens at the end of each scene, even if you, you know, miss out on what someone's saying, or you don't get to read every little picture in the room or something like that. You can look around. But so the game itself is, aside from the blinking, it's quite a simple game though. Like you're just kind of going through scene by scene. You're usually making, you know, a simple choice. Like sometimes you have to describe something with an adjective or whatnot, but it's a pretty linear experience. And it kind of starts off and you're told to zoom in right at the start, and then you appear in this boat, and it's almost like a River Styx situation where you're recounting your life. You seem to have died to this ferryman who's going to like relay your story and get you through the gate at the end of the game. And that's why he's trying to learn about your life. And it's just, I think it's a really great frame. And I think that narrator himself he's such a, like a welcoming character. I really enjoyed mm-hmm. the way he spoke and like his voice. And it's a pretty dire situation I think you're in. Like you're always, there's an air of like, you know, there's like a grim mystery going on, but for some reason he's like very compelling off the start, and it makes you want to sit through and see what happens. And then I guess it just kind of, before long, you get really drawn into the game, or at least I did. And then you kind of, I don't know, it really escalates, I think, as it goes.
Yeah, the story to me, like, obviously the mechanic is really interesting. And I think, especially in the second half, they utilize it really well. But I think even without the mechanic, it is just a really compelling, like, visual story. Like, because this game could very easily be a, like, Edith Finch style, like, mm-hmm. game, or like a Florence or one of those, yeah. where you're more or less just sort of watching a story unfold and you have a little bit of interaction with it, but for the most part you are, you know, just more of an audience member. So I think even taking away the mechanic, which I think adds a lot and made this game like enhance the story, I found just the story itself to be very compelling. The characters were interesting, the way it's laid out before you, the way that it kind of like twists partway through, I would say, is kind of where I'd perfectly stop before that twisty moment the first time I played. And I sat down within 10 minutes of playing the second time. I was like, oh shit, okay, this is a different game than I thought it was at the beginning.
Yeah, it's very different. It has a morbid twist, right? You get to learn a bit about I guess what causes this character to die and get into this situation. And there's a lot of there's some family dynamics that happen, and you get to see the relationship with a few different people. And it's definitely something where on face value, you wouldn't expect to be emotionally impacted by it. But this game is a heavy hitter. And I think, like you said, Florence is such a great comparable to I don't think I've played. It's the same thing. And I would describe this as a very indie art narrative focused, minimal mechanics, but they're intentional in the way that they design it, especially at the end, the way that the game ends and how it makes you interact in the last time, I think is just so, it's a way, we say, games can tell a story in that way. You couldn't have that experience of this game, not in a game setting.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think the eye mechanic, it was funny when we talked last night, I think the eye thing is kind of interesting, but I feel like it's a little underutilized because I think it could be doing more to make you complicit as an active participant. The blinking is interesting, but if the scenes just faded, it wouldn't feel too different. But as I played more, I really regret saying that to you because I do think they kind of integrate a few different different ways of how the blinks work, but even just looking back on it and the way that you are changing how the pacing works based on your blinking, and you become complicit in the story. You don't feel as much like you're watching a story unfold, even though that's totally what it is. There are a few decisions you can make, but they're very surface level. They don't really impact the story. There aren't going to be multiple endings because you change the person's life. You are on rails watching the story unfold about this person, reliving moments from their life. But the way that you control it with the blinking and the way that you only see as much as you get to see in various scenes, and it creates that kind of everyone's going to have a slightly different experience with the game. And the way that it ends where you really do feel like you've got more of an agency as a player, but it's also it's so weird to describe it because obviously you're a player, that's the whole point of games, is that you've got the agency. But the fact that it is agency that you can't fully control, you almost feel I almost feel like I've ripped that scene away from the character because I blinked and I shouldn't have, or and I'll be honest, I cried at the end of this game.
I was close.
I was so incredibly invested in it, and it felt so emotional at the end. And I honestly don't think, I think the story would have impacted me regardless, but that extra mechanic, I think, is what tipped me over the edge of being so, that extra level of invested and kind of almost feeling responsible for part of the story.
That's interesting. It's interesting you took it that way, because I know what you're saying, because you're in control of every game that you play, but you're doing it through buttons. Whereas in this game, you're doing it through your physical being and the way you're playing it. But to me, what was emotional about it was that it made me the story is very emotional. Don't get me wrong. I was pretty close to tears at the end too, just thinking about it. But then afterwards, kind of the retrospect of what is this game saying about the way that we live? You know, it's saying time is fleeting and like you said, you can't remember everything, and you blink and it's gone unless you're very intentional. Mm-hmm. The times in the game when I was very intentional, keeping my eyes open because I really wanted to see how, there's a scene, there's a girl that you meet early on, and you potentially might have a love interest, or she's a good friend or whatever it is, and you're very lonely and she's the connection you have in school, and she invites you to go to this beach at night so you can choose to sneak out or not. And I did. And you go lay on the beach and she's just talking to you. And that scene, for whatever reason, for me was just I really want to see all of this scene. And I was so intentional about keeping my eyes open. But then there's other ones, like you said before too, where it's gone and I couldn't even tell you what happened in it because I just saw half a sentence. So it is very unique, but then it makes you think in your own life, what have I paid attention to versus what has gone by like that, and like what details have you missed? And it's just so like meta that I mm-hmm. think it's that's what's interesting about this game, is I think that if whoever plays it, you could have a very interesting conversation with them about like the meaning behind it, not just the narrative as well, mm-hmm. like what it's trying to say. I think this game is fantastic.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, I think it has exactly that kind of message. It's going to be unique to everybody. Like when you play, you're going to have a different takeaway or like a little bit of a different experience with it. And I think that like, yeah, that extra layer of physicality and the way that it is grounded in your own like body as you're playing it just enhances that moment you have afterwards where you really like sit and think about it and you think like, well, what are the things I'm going to remember at the end, like it's morbid, but it's also really like kind of beautiful in a way. Like it is a sad game about like the death of somebody and them reliving their lives and what gave their life meaning and what were the relationships they had and what do they wish they had done differently and what are they happy that they did. And those are just so like fundamental human experiences that everybody's gonna unfortunately mm-hmm. have to do. But at the same time, like it adds a lot of beauty to it. Like some of the things you remember are like, you know, like just on a day at home and like my cat was sitting with me and like they seem like they're not always these big life-changing moments. Sometimes they're the mundane things, but mm-hmm. that, you know, added just like that extra flash of like beauty and comfort into our lives. And
it's
very interesting what scenes are shown, because some of them feel, a lot of them feel very different or have different varying like weights to them. And I almost think it's interesting, like, if there was a version of the game that has scenes you don't get to see, like, because you see everything, it's just to what length you see the scene in, right? Like either like 40% of it or 100% of it or whatever. It's depending how long you stay in that scene before you blink. But I think it's interesting kind of like the extrapolation of this concept. It's like, what are all the other things that we didn't get to see because, you know, we just mm-hmm. weren't present for them.
Yeah. And that kind of shapes like the context of the game, right? Like to me, mm-hmm. I had the impression that my character had a first crush with the girl on the beach, but I could totally see a version of this game where you've played and like you miss certain interactions where that wasn't the case. And that's like, that's mm-hmm. your interpretation, right? I had an interesting thought about this game and I've been debating it back and forth. Like, do you think this game is stronger because you play as a specific character, or do you think it would have been better as like a nameless character, like you were the character, you know? Like, I initially thought mm-hmm. that it would be better as me, but now I'm kind of on the train of like, I like the watching this specific Benny character that we have.
Yeah, so this is kind of interesting. I think you could make a game that, I agree, I think I prefer that it's Benny and looking through Benny's life, but I think you could use this mechanic to make a game that is a bit more ambiguous. Like, one of the things I was almost kind of felt a little bit let down when I saw this game, because when I saw the trailers, I thought it was going to be a little bit less of a cohesive story we were watching. And I thought it was going to be more about like bouncing around between scenes. And maybe that was just like an incorrect impression I had gotten from whatever trailer I'd watched. And I thought it was really going to be more like kind of incoherent, like you'd bounce around, like, you know, here's a memory from when you were 20, here's a memory from when you were 35, and now we're 7 again. And I thought it was going to be a lot more like haphazard and kind of like inconsistent. And then you'd have to sort of piece things together at the end based on like what you saw, but it would be in more of a obscure format. And when this game turned out was very obvious early on that it was going to be like more linear, I was a little bit disappointed, because I thought like, oh, you know, I kind of had that expectation and I wanted it to be the mm-hmm. game I thought it was going to be. And then I ended up being really happy that the game was exactly what it is, because once I got over that disappointment, I realized that the game was, you know, really fantastic and I love everything about it. So I agree. I think for this game, being Benny was great, but I could see this format working. Like, I don't want to use my eyes as a controller for many games, but I could see it working in something a little bit more abstract as well, and in that kind of context. But
yeah, I think the story couldn't be so specific then, like the way that they're telling mm-hmm. it about Benny himself, he can have a specific relationship with his mom, exactly. And it makes sense
Exactly. It would have to be a different, you know, story or setting being told. But for what it was, I think that I like poor Benny a lot.
Me too. I feel bad for him in some ways. But yeah, I mean, anything else you wanted to mention on Before Your Eyes?
No, I think we did an okay job of not spoiling too much. I think people should play it.
I think so.
It took about an hour and 20 minutes to beat it. I did it in two sittings. And I would say, like, just for sake of variety and for sake of trying something novel and unique that actually is also, like, I would say of a very high quality, I would totally recommend it. And especially playing it on my phone was cool. Like, I don't really play games on my phone, but this actually was a really good phone game to utilize because you've obviously got the camera already set up. Like, it's super simple to just sit there with your phone for an hour. And yeah, I could not recommend this game more. Like, I'm going to probably be like consumed by it for the next few days, just like thinking back on all the like what ifs and how things could have been different.
100%. Yeah, this is one for sure you could recommend to people that have a Netflix subscription that don't play a lot of games and just be like, hey, check this out on your phone.
Like this game to me should have like Journey status. Like, you know, when Journey was really popular, everyone's like, you got to play Journey. Like, you've never played a game like this. Like, I would say like this is kind of
it's so
on
short
par like, with that sort of experience.
It's so short that you really don't have a reason not to try it. Yeah, so play that. Anyway. Let me change topics here. Now, Kate, I have a surprise for you today because originally I was going to talk about Eastward on the show today. Mm-hmm. And to your knowledge, that is what I'm going to talk about. But it's not because I haven't beaten Eastward and I'm getting close to the end. And I'm just like, you know, if I delay it one more week, I can just talk about the game in its full breadth. And that just makes so much more sense. So what I'm going to talk about today is another game I may or may not have found on the Netflix game store. As I was looking around, so I found this thread, and the way that I found Before Your Eyes was because someone pointed it out on this thread online of like good games to play on like the Netflix service. And so played Before Your Eyes, and the other one that they had really recommended was a game called, and I promise you this is a real name, Poinpy.
Okay.
Spelled P-O-I-N-P-Y. I encourage you to look it up if you want.
Okay.
But Poinpy is the reason I was interested enough to try this game is because it's published by Devolver Digital, everybody. Our favorite Devolver. Mm-hmm. So it can't be that bad, right? And it turns out this game is a lot more than it appears on face value. And I would liken it almost to a game like Downwell. Do you know Downwell?
I don't know. Maybe that's two games I've got to check out.
So for those that don't know Downwell, it's like a game where you play as a stick man, also published by Devolver. And basically you jump down a well and you can steer him left or right. And you have to like avoid enemies or jump on them, or you get different guns that you can shoot kind of downward as you're dropping. Mm-hmm. And there's a few other mechanics, but that's basically the gist of it. And you see how far you can make it down the well as you go further further depths, the areas kind of change, different enemies, different things go on. Pretty simple, but pretty cool. And this game is like the opposite. You're going up and you're kind of this this little guy.
Sorry,
and you're jumping
I just found a screenshot
and
of
collecting fruits. I was hoping you would. So it looks ridiculous. And it's like a silly little game, but it's actually a lot of fun. You're kind of jumping up and it's got like a slingshot kind of thing. If you think you'd like click on your phone, you pull back your thumb, and then he would launch in the opposite direction. Like a pool cue, if you've ever played like pool
like
on your phone.
Ekans hoop toss in like, Pokemon Stadium 1.
just like that. And so you're basically climbing up this tube, and there's different like platforms on it, and some enemies, they're all holding different fruit. There's like fruit flying around, and there's this big circular happy blue Snorlax looking monster, and he's like climbing up after you from behind. And the point of the game is that you have to like satiate his hunger by collecting the right fruits, and you have like three jumps at a time, and you have to collect all the fruit you need within like enough jumps before you touch the ground, in which case you like feed him. And basically you have to just make it as far up as you can.
Body if he catches you,
he'll eat you otherwise. That's what he does. So you're basically just trying to make it as far up as you can and like collect more and more complex and like larger orders of fruit every time. And eventually like the first level is a jungle and you'll make it up, and the next one's like an underwater thing. And so it gets a little harder with enemies and whatnot, but then as the game goes, you also are like leveling up. I'm guessing the character's name is Poinpy. And so you like get more jumps consecutively before you have to touch the ground and regenerate them. You can do things like freeze time as you're trying to aim, because usually like just slow-mos, but you can't like actually take forever to aim your shot. You can get all these different upgrades. And then there's also what you unlock later on once you have enough jumps to make it over to this other section in the on the menu. There's like a whole puzzle mode, and there's all like complete this like this drink, but you only get to jump 3 times, and you can like bounce off the walls and do all these different puzzles, and there's just so much to it. And I've just loved Point P as a time killing game for the past like 2 or 3 days. What a lovely, colorful little treat.
Super cute. This reminds, okay, so I've got a few thoughts on it. Mm-hmm. I've got a screenshot pulled up. I've got 3 thoughts. My first thought, actually I got 4. My first thought is that the little guy you play as Point P, he reminds me of like the guys you play in like those like Bubble Bobble games.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Or whatever, like the ones where you have those like little dinosaurs and you'd shoot the stuff and above you.
Mm-hmm.
The guy at the bottom that you're trying to feed looks like a first draft from like a Miyazaki movie. Like this was like Totoro on his first go through, and then he was like, you know, redesigned 7 times.
Yeah. Now, to be fair, also, I don't know if the Point P is the thing you're trying to feed, or if the little green guy that you play as is Point P. I don't know.
That's fair. My third thought is this looks very like Yoshi's Story. And I think mostly it's because of the fruit. Like, yeah. I remember collecting fruit in that game.
You remember bananas, the watermelons in Yoshi's Story? Like, with they're stripey? When you get to the second area in this game, there's also watermelons that look exactly like that.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. The fruit reminds me of that game. And then fourth, this just looks like fun. This looks like when, like, everybody had an iPod Touch in, like, middle school. And we'd all, like, download games on them. And everyone would be playing, like, what it would always be like the arcade, and like it was like they were all free to play, and you'd just have a bunch of games on your like music iPad, like touch for music and need of games and shit. And like this reminds me, like it's almost kind of like nostalgic for that era of like when gaming on like your phone or like a touch screen was kind of first like a big deal, and there was just millions of little arcade games like this.
Yeah. And you know what's funny about this is I kind of have that same feeling. Like, by no means am I going to continue to play this all the time, but like it is more fun than you think. And what I love about it is that it's like playing one of those fun mobile games, but because it's through Netflix, there's no ads, and it because it's like so it's like freemium, right? Like part of the reason those games suck so bad is even if they have like a mechanic that's actually kind of fun to mess around with, you have to sit through so many ads and wait for the gems and all this stuff. But this is you can just play this as if it's like on your NES or something over and over in like a Tetris round or something. Mm-hmm. So it's perfect in that way. But yeah, it's fun for what it is. I would recommend checking it out if you want to kill some time. You could do a lot worse on your phone than Point
B. You could do a lot less. You could sit there and do nothing. So yeah, you could. That's maybe worse than playing Point
B. That's right. And the good thing about this game too is I think you can get to the end. I think there actually is an end, like a top. I don't think it's just like an endless thing. And for me, that's good motivation because I don't love like high score stuff. But if there's a finale, maybe one day I can get there and like add it to my list. Games I beat, so that's fun. I don't think I'll ever beat Point B though, to be honest. But we'll see. Anyways, I guess that brings us to listener mail for the day, because we are changing the order of the show. So I'll pass that one over to you to read our lovely question for today.
Yeah, so this is a fun one. it's also hilarious. So this reminds, like, also can back to middle school nostalgia of playing little arcade games. There is the middle school nostalgia of like whatever little, like, I don't know where this, like, who invented this, but everybody knows this game and has played it. And it's, like, the Fuck, Marry, Kill game, which sounds horrible if you don't know what it is. But if you do know what it is, you get 3 things and you have to assign them to those categories. So, like, 1 of the 3 you have to fuck, 1 of the 3 you have to marry, and 1 of the 3 you have to kill. And in middle school, it would often be, like, 3 boys in our class, and it would just be like a hilarious thing that 12-year-olds would do that, like, obviously, like, would never come to anything. But we have today 3 things that we have to group into those categories that are like selling points of video games. So the first one is being addictive as a selling point, being immersive as a selling point, and then being over a certain amount of hours as a selling point.
Mm-hmm, like playtime length.
Yeah, playtime length, and where we would slot those in through this ridiculous three-step these ridiculous structure. Metrics.
Okay. This is a fun one for sure. Do you want to go first or second?
I'll go first because I immediately did this. I did this in about 30 seconds and was like, yep, I know exactly what I want to do. So I would kill over X amount of hours because I just don't ever really see that as a positive. I often find at best it's stressful. At worst, it's a turnoff because I don't have 200 hours to put in every single game. And I also think that, like, you know, sometimes that's a shorthand for, like, we put a bunch of bloat and, like, the best parts of the game are, you know, comprised of 30 hours, but you have to play this game for 200 to finish it. And it becomes a slog. And, like, some games justify the length. Like, you know, I love Persona. I played 140 hours of Elden Ring.
Divinity?
And, like,
Divinity?
Divinity. It's not like I never play long games, but I just think that, like, the game should be the length it needs to be.
There's only so many games that justify that length.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And I think it's like a trap that people fall into of, like, oh, what value? Because it costs like X amount of money per dollar. And so, like, you know, but it can be a little bit of a trap. So I would kill that and just, you know, the game should be as long as it needs to be, not on a
imagine if For Your Eyes was like 20 hours long.
Well, that's the thing, right?
For 20 hours instead of
First of all, my eyes would have fallen out of my skull because my eyes felt like shit after that game of straining to keep them open. And second of all, like, I think a lot of experiences are end up being more meaningful because they were fleeting. Like, that's kind of the point. So anyway, that's what I would do. I would fuck addictive as a selling point because I just think that's kind of the point of what an addictive game is, right? Like,
sure.
It's just, you know, if a game is addictive, it is supposed to be, like, meaningful but not deep. And so, like, you know, you have fun with it for a small portion of time and then you don't think about it afterwards.
Sure.
Exactly. And then I would marry immersive games because that to me is actually a good aspect and something that does sell me on games. because I like to be immersed in the story and a world, and if I'm going to marry something, I'd like, you know, there to be some depth in that relationship.
100%. Okay. Yeah, that's good. I'm going to go, so for mine, I've interpreted it a little different, but maybe that's good for conversation. So for my list, I agree. I'm going to marry immersive as well. I think out of all of them, like, I think as a marketing term, I find it cheesy because, like, what does it mean if a game is immersive? Like, I don't know if I've ever sat down and been like, whoa, wait, 8 hours have passed. Like, what's happened? You know, like, people use that as, like, an analogy for, like, you sit into your couch and you don't realize the day is flowing by, and I get it. But, like, I haven't actually lost time for, like, 8 hours and not known what was going on. Like, games aren't actually that immersive to the point where you, like, lose reality. And I think sometimes that's what they're trying to get across when they say immersive. But either way, I still think it's a good thing. So I'll take that.
Have you heard the word verisimilitude?
No, I love it. I love
so
that,
that to me is how I define immersive, which I think is why I see it as a very positive quality. So verisimilitude is a quality, and, like, usually used to describe, like, some kind of media, like a book or a game, and it is, like, the quality or, like, appearance of being, like, real or, like, true. And so I would use that to describe a game where, like, or a book of, like, where, like, it's obviously a fictional world I'm in, and it's not like I'm, like, you know, like, unaware of being in the real world, and I'm not actually there, and, like, yeah, I didn't all stop playing and all of a sudden it's Sunday because, you know, I forgot to eat and, like,
yeah, that's
drink.
What I'm talking
about. When you're in that world, like, it's cohesive and all the things make sense and it has its own rules that everything abides by, and it feels like it has an internal logic that makes it, like, a world that could exist. And so I think that's what I feel like when we say immersive, like,
fair enough.
You know,
I think you're right. I'm thinking it from the perspective of how they're trying to use it as a marketing term, because that was the question.
Yeah, that's fair.
I don't think they're talking about verisimilitude. when they're marketing
it. That's fair. I don't think, yeah, like Call of Duty isn't gonna sell me because, like, oh, it's like you're really in a war. Like, oh god, no, stop.
You know what?
I hope not.
You made my day by teaching me this word. I love it. Okay, so back to the list. Back to the list.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhat controversially, I'm gonna actually fuck over 100 hours, and I don't think.
That is such a good out of context quote.
You're gonna pull that one out of the podcast.
Yeah, I just clipped that.
Put that on YouTube Shorts. We'll get so many hits. Because I think as a marketing term, it's like, I don't know. Like, I don't think most games need to be that long. I think you could shave like 20% to 40% of the length off of most games that come out, and they'd be better for it. But like, I think this is more about me just hating addictive as a marketing term. I hate it. I just want to talk about that.
That's often how this game starts, is like, you don't pick them. Oh, you it's kind of like process of elimination. It's like, which do I hate the absolute most? Okay, I'm going to kill that one, and exactly. Then I'll assign the other.
That's how it's going to go. Like, because yeah. I just want to talk about how much I hate addictive as a marketing term, because you see it all the time, and it's often on like mobile ads. And this is what, like, I guess I'm thinking about it because I've been on like PointyP and all this stuff, is because you'll see in the review, it's like, oh, addictive gameplay. Like, first of all, what does that mean? Second of all, like, why is it a good thing if you get addicted to something? And like, also, it reinforces this argument that like people that don't understand games are like, oh, video game addiction is this huge thing. And like, I'm sure there are people that are addicted to games. You can be addicted to anything if you form a habit. But it's like this like red herring thing that people are all, you know, moral panicking about. And then there's like these games that are marketing themselves as addicting as a good quality. And then I don't know. And then you hear people like, oh yeah, I'm so addicted to this game. And I just feel like, that's not good, man. I don't know. Like, that's just how I take it. I've been addicted to, like, I binged Persona for like a whole weekend, for example. Like, I think that can be like an enjoyable experience. But in general, I don't like, it is like a positive, like, notch in the positive column for being addictive. Like, I don't think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think I kind of like interpret it more like just as the terms of like what they are in general, whereas you looked at it very much in the context of marketing. And like, if you, to me, like, addictive is just like the really shitty version of immersive. Like, you know,
budget immersive.
It's just like the evil version, because like, what it screams to me is like, we're gonna make you pay a bunch of microtransactions, is what that screams to me in a marketing campaign. Like, if the game just wants you to, you know, play a lot about it, then why not use the term immersive if you're gonna have that, like, you know, you're so committed and you're gonna play your whole weekend away because you're so immersed in it. But if you use the term addictive, I'm like, oh, I have to get my wallet out. Got it. Yeah. Like, but sure.
Could you be immersive? Like, what if you got, I wouldn't say like Super Smash Bros. Is immersive, but I would say you could get it. It could be addictive, like one more match. Like,
I guess that's
within
fair.
The context of different kinds of games.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. I just think, yeah, addictive has that horrible connotation of like, it's scammy, right? Like, it seems a little bit like it's got a nefarious undertone. Like, I picture like Raid Shadow Legends and like a gacha game. Whenever that turn comes up. Yeah. And like, it's not to say I've never been like really into a game and like, you know, felt that like I just want to binge it. Like,
we've had that experience.
And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but you're right that it is a weird thing to market, because like, addiction by definition is not healthy.
But like, if you put that in the marketing, that means they must have feedback that people out there are like looking for games that are described as addictive. Like, are you going through like, what am I gonna get into next? Like, it's so weird. I don't know.
And that tends to be paired up with practices of like, giving you like false reasons to keep playing, which usually tends to be battle passes and like unlocking new characters and spend money to, you know, get all this extra content. And
I think it's like aligned with mobile, and that's like a lot of mobile stuff and like live service stuff, like you know, like WoW and like etc. games. I don't know. It's interesting though, and even like immersive is like a weird, like, to me, that's not a nefarious one, but it's just like, what does it really mean? You know, like, we just talked about it now. It means something different to both of us. I'm sure if you go to GameSpot GameStop right now and pull everyone in the store, they're going to say something variable, you know? But it's just, at worst, it's ambiguous. I don't think it's bad if a game is immersive. the other two can be like detrimental somehow. Fun to talk about.
Yeah. All right, interesting question.
Yeah, that's good. Let's get to this trailer, shall we? Now, this is the part where we're going to do something new, everybody, like we mentioned at the top. We're going to watch the trailer for Final Fantasy 16 that was the state of play from a couple of days ago. So let's get it started here. For anyone that doesn't want to watch along, this is going to be better definitely for the video listeners. But for those of you on audio that are going to move, move on to the next podcast, thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us. And for everyone else, let's get this trailer started. Let's hope it's the right volume. I'm assuming you can hear it, okay? We're doing it live for everybody. First time for
everyone. Hello, everyone. This is Naoki Yoshida, producer of Final Fantasy 16. And welcome to the stage of play. Today, I'm here to talk a little bit about the story, world, and combat system of
Final Fantasy 16. Now, how excited are you for Final Fantasy 16?
Basically zero. Like, I think they're cool games. They're just not something that I've ever gotten into. I know you are excited.
I'm quite excited for this one. And for those that haven't heard us talk about it before, just because I don't really know. This game apparently has, like, very Devil May Cry-esque combat. And, like, the same designer, I think, actually worked on the combat. So that makes me even more excited, too, because that's something I've always wanted to try, but haven't yet had a chance.
You all know the target. Shiva's dominant. And only the dominant.
What is that with File Masters? Always like weird symbols on their face.
They love
like,
face are those tattoos.
Yeah. Are they tattoos? Or
they
are they
love
like
tattoos.
Branding kind?
Well, it's kind of both.
Okay. I just mean, like, did the person go out and get that tattooed, or are they, like, question. Born with it as, like, a secret symbol?
I mean, I think they get them.
Okay. I think, yeah, Rune of Fall Hunter's just pretty metal, I got it.
I don't know if Paul's got that, but that's a pretty metal jacket, though.
Allow me to welcome you to the world of Final Fantasy 16.
It is gorgeous. Like, these games are always beautiful.
Final Fantasy 16 is the latest installment in the Final Fantasy series, a storied franchise with 35 years of history.
All the, like, little sparks that come off the attacks just look so cool.
Their particle effects engine is outrageous. Games before jumping
in. With a fusion of real-time action and RPG features, Final Fantasy 16
what RPG features
are? The first true action RPG.
Probably like leveling up your character and like gear and stuff. Tree.
Using the power of the PlayStation 5 to its fullest, the game delivers an expansive, thrilling gameplay experience, which we liken to a high-speed roller coaster ride.
Like, this is the kind of game, like I'm kind of interested to play, like, even just for the spectacle of it. Like, it looks so badass, and the creature design's always cool.
I think for you it would come down to how compelled you end up being in the world and story, because I don't think for as cool as the kind of combat that you'll love. I don't know, there's always room for exceptions, of course.
I think I almost like want to hang out with someone. Well, my ideal is like someone I know is playing Final Fantasy and I hang out while they play it, but like play my own game. I want to like sit and just like, you know, play something on my Switch while I watch someone else play Final Fantasy. Because like I want to see all the spectacle, but like cool I don't want to do that. Guy was cool as hell. Like I want to see that boss fight, but I don't want to play the like, you know, like 30 hours to get there.
The protagonist of our story is Clive Rosfield.
I think that's my biggest fear of this game so far, is like, it's just gonna, I know it's gonna be huge. Like, that's the problem. And I'm fine to just play the main story and kind of do the side stuff as I want, but I just hope it's not like mandatory enough to where I have to be wasting like 200,000 hours, you know? I love the subtitle there. Oh.
Yes.
The story begins with Clive and his targets. A fully playable flashback will allow you to experience the pivotal events that shaped his past and present.
Ooh, a bunch of rocks falling on him. I love the outfits too. Like, I just love the like edgy design that Final Fantasy's got.
It's like everyone dresses like medieval, like emo rockers, and no one has a problem mm-hmm. with it. No one says anything. They're just like, yeah, you look fucking cool, dude.
I will say, like, this setting is the most interesting to me, because, like, some of them are a bit more, like, futuristic, but I do dig this, like, old-school castle-y
one. Well, Final Fantasy is, like, it's kind of like Resident Evil, or anything. They had an action horror split. Like, Final Fantasy really has, like, a medieval futuristic split.
But this trailer is very, like, more medieval and, like, you know, phoenixes and creatures and monsters and not as much tech, and that... appeals to me a lot more.
Yeah, because definitely like a lot more of the modern ones have been more tech focused, like 15 I think is like you got the cars and all that stuff.
Yeah, like I'd rather fight a big hell demon than fight like evil organization who's like, you know, taking all the resources. Like I would say maybe they're more of a bad guy than evil demon, but evil demon's cooler.
Yeah, yeah. The world map can be opened at any time. It doesn't look like there's a bunch of shit on here. All manner of locations across Valisthea.
It's so pretty here, though. Players oh my will meet god. New friends, encounter formidable foes, and uncover
great and wondrous mysteries. Yeah, I'm pretty like I would be surprised if this wasn't one of the most beautiful games on the system to date, I think. Just because it's been developed for so long, like it's mid-life cycle-ish to the console now, you know, like expectations are pretty high for that. Just like Elden Ring or God of War 2. And,
yeah, the environments are incredible. Like, this is interesting. If this wasn't a Final Fantasy game, I feel like I would be like really hyped about this trailer. So like, it's weird that I think it's just because it's such a big series and I know I'm not a Final Fantasy fan that I've like kind of like written it off. Like, oh, it's another Final Fantasy game. I don't play those. But looking at this trailer without having any kind of bias about the series, like, I want to play this game. This looks amazing.
Like the connotation of, yeah. Yeah. Next, I'd like to talk
about the combat of Final Fantasy 16. It really is the combat that I get a little lost. Take place in real time and are not turn-based.
As Clive progresses through the story, he will learn a wide array of exciting abilities. To me, what I love about the combat is like this is like my favorite style of combat, I think, after playing like 7 remake and whatnot. And it's because like the action's a little less technical in terms of like the execution. But then you have the added elements of like, okay, where am I gonna use my elemental moves and my healing and like my RPGS abilities and like break my opponent with their weaknesses and stuff like that. And that stuff combines so nicely to me.
Yeah, I totally understand the appeal. I just have trouble like enjoying it for like the span of an entire game. Which is weird because I'd almost rather like the extremes. I'd rather like the more like precision based combat or like just a full on turn based. Where I'm
fair enough.
Strategizing. Like it's when they're blended that I get lost a little bit.
Because there's like gauges at the top. You can see it's all building up and you're like switching characters and...
Yeah.
My god, look at that. Look at that spear attack. You know?
I mean, it's so cool. That's why I want to watch you. I gotta come watch you play it. Like, it's so cool to watch.
That was... Look at that. It's slashing right here. Sorry to the audio for listening to stuck around to watch the trailer.
Yeah, like, they're just showing, like...
It's just
like a Rocky montage of like the coolest fights you've ever seen. Like, this is the final episode of like every anime.
Yeah.
Just in a montage.
It's like cutscenes from different animes in like the last fight. You know what else I really like about this too is like the UI is so minimal. I like the big health bar at the top because it's very vital information. And then the rest of like your equipment and your items at the bottom, they're a lot more like out of the way so you can enjoy like the visual.
Yeah, it is a very visual experience. Unique characteristics
depending on the icon. Here's the RPG elements.
Yeah, players, they've got some skill wheels. By defeating enemies to unlock more abilities or
upgrade existing ones. This guy's been saving way too many points. Look how many things he's unlocked.
Yeah, man. Upgrade? No problem. Either that, or you just put in some point cheat, you know. I think this is the other thing too, is like these games, kind of games, Final always Fantasy have like a million different abilities you can use, and I find that overwhelming. So like, even when I have like 30, I'm like, I'm gonna use these two and nothing else.
What about like Divinity though?
But that's turn-based, so it's different. Like, oh, I will use them in a turn-based game, but I won't use them in an action game. Like. And maybe that's my fault. Maybe the comic's boring because I don't use them all, but I just like.
That might be it. I mean, does like. I mean, who knows? Depends on the game. It's the ring of timely focus and the ring of
timely strikes. I do like this ring that lets you kind of like. Do some cool dodges.
Allows you to unleash a wide array of techniques. As well
as shifting into so, yes, I'm overwhelmed. And I have a technique. Giving them a little extra time to hit R1 and evade. I do like the evasion ring though, like that's cool. Players could equip an accessory that fully automates
evasion. As I said before, I really encourage everyone to discover the combination. See, that's what I don't think is cool, is like locking that behind an accessory.
Yeah, that just seems like that should be a mode.
That's an accessibility feature. You shouldn't have to waste your slot.
Yeah. And for those who want to concentrate on the story, don't forget to choose story focus mode before starting a new game.
In this mode, timely accessories are automatically equipped from the start, allowing players to immerse themselves in the narrative experience without having to worry too much.
That one's for mom.
She would never play this. But I would love to watch that.
Let us know in the comments below if you want us to stream our mom doing a Let's Play Final Fantasy 16 on story mode.
Oh my god. His journey, I would. Friends and allies. I would do. I want to
look at the Moogle, Kate.
So
there's a Moogle.
Yeah, it's Koopa. Koopa. Koopa is what do we say? Koopa?
Mont Blanc. Or yeah, Koopa. Koopa. And it keeps the black from our lungs. But how do you survive without magic? Sidolphus, who becomes a mentor to Clive.
Jill, a friend from Clive's youth. It really is. Such encounters and reunions will set Clive on a path of great personal growth.
It is.
Clive!
I hope the, character stories are as interesting as like the overarching like world narrative. I find that sometimes Final Fantasy is like really strong with the overarching narrative, but then the character relations are kind of like the. Party
members are. What about the boy bands in their
yeah, car? Yeah, see, I don't know if I love the boy bands. A couple of them go along well, but like, I saw how they had relationships with the main character, but then amongst each other, it felt very much like okay, I'm the tough guy, and I'm the quirky one, and we're gonna interact like that every time.
Right.
Whereas other games, like Final Fantasy VII Remake, was like phenomenal, and the characters felt like a real cohesive unit. So.
Right. So it can be a little hit or miss.
Right, but this game is also written, I think the writer was from the 14, right, the MMO, and apparently that's like one of the best stories in Final Fantasy, so I hope that carries over.
Oh, and we cannot forget Torgal.
You get a pet dog. Oh, that's big points.
A smart, strong, and fiercely loyal hound, Torgal is always by Clive's side and willing to stand by him in the face of whatever cruel fate may befall them. Torgal will act of his own accord, but players can also give him direct commands.
But can you pet him? That's
just
the big question.
Don't forget to give this good boy some treats every now and then.
Don't forget to give this good boy some treats.
Don't starve your dog, please.
Don't fret about Karen. I've taken care of her fee.
All of it.
She's the best healer this side of the belt.
What? I did not expect his voice to be that deep.
Right?
Go. Have a look around. I'll be my solo.
After progressing somewhat through the game, Clive will gain access to Cid's hideaway.
Oh, that was Cid.
Isn't he a character that's been in a lot of Final Fantasy games?
There's always us in every Final Fantasy, okay. But he's always a different guy. Weapons, armor, and usually he's like a shopkeeper, like the airship pilot and stuff.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I know him from the Disney Final Fantasy game, Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah.
He's like a shopkeeper there.
Yeah. I think there might be one where he's a party member, but I could be wrong on that.
After upgrading your equipment or unlocking new abilities, try accessing the Arete Stone.
Rosetta Stone?
Yeah, just this game can actually teach you German or like another language if you like.
I was thinking like Moogle, but let's go with German.
Yeah, Moogle. All Moogles speak German. Little known fact. Confident in your skills,
try your hand at arcade. It's training time. See how your scores stack up against players from around
the world. Oh, even like online, right?
It's arcade mode. It's like see who can score the most points. A lot of other features as well.
Yeah, and you got your side quests.
I just hope this game doesn't bog you down with like a ton of crafting and like picking up like a shitload of different materials on the grass as you're running by. Like, I want to be free to explore and engage with the quest and not have to spend all this time like making leather armor and then making it into the next one. And like, you know, I don't like that.
Yeah, you want it to be a little bit more streamlined than some of these games tend to be, while still having options to do like side quests or like some content. Busy saving the world. She's got some long hair.
She does. Look at his hair. He's got so much moose in there.
So cool. He does. It must be rock hard.
Doesn't look like it. Yeah. I don't think this game will be like that, to be honest, though, just because it's like from. I feel like Square is more too Japanese for that. I think it's more like the Western open worlds that are more Skyrim-y and more like that.
And I feel like it has, like, it's all, like, that kind of stuff is all optional, too. Like, you can go to, like, the Moogle, like, quest board, but, like, you don't have to do that if you don't want to. About the realm in desperate need of slaying, the Moogle will be your guide.
It's a nice map.
It is a nice map. I like the music, too. This is nice, like... I really think the creature design is, like, the biggest standout to me in this game.
There's also Loresman Harpocrates, who will unlock Valisthea's secrets as Clive recounts tales of his adventures.
I love when they bring back the pixel art.
Yeah, it looks so good.
And they have the blue menu as well. Like, that is awesome.
Yeah. Dude, we thought the other guy's voice was deep. The tones? Oh, no, it's not that deep. Oops.
I will not be spending any time in with this guy until you end up reading the tones.
You don't want to go read bedtime stories with that guy?
No. Explain to Clive the current state of the realm and provide information on key players. What is this?
There are all kinds of interactions and features in the hideaway to help players get even more enjoyment out of their time with Final Fantasy 16.
See, this is where it feels like the bogged down stuff is maybe gonna happen. But again... Yeah, but again, if it's optional.
Look at that ice area. That is wicked. Like the rim. Mm-hmm.
On his travels, Clive will encounter a wide array of fearsome foes.
That was a cool transition.
Night of Blinding Dawn.
That's a badass name.
That guy looks like he's from Monster Hunter.
He does. Cut the tail off, Clive. Get a new hat.
Oh, nice dodge.
Midnight Raven.
That's a Mega Man X Anthony.
That's a band, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, he's only level 12. He can't be that hard.
What? I don't think you're allowed to call yourself Midnight Raven if you're only level 12.
Come on.
Like, you gotta earn that.
Yeah, you can't just go around calling yourself Midnight Raven.
This guy's just called Hugo. See, he hasn't earned a cool title yet.
Yeah, he has. Look at his icon.
What does that mean?
It's the summon. Look at his arm.
The theme is just like pure anime drugs in like the best way possible. Like, it's so over the top and, like, exaggerated, but it's awesome.
They so clearly want to indicate what the element is everything.
Constructs of the fallen. Yeah. Civilization shrouded in mystery. It's control node.
That's more of a level 12 name to me.
Mm-hmm.
This is cool. Man, there must be a lot of bosses in this game because they're just flying through these at like a very rapid rate. And showing
right?
They
feel
like five or six bosses now.
This game must be packed with things. I know it's a state of play, so like we get a deeper dive, but I'm surprised by the amount of content they've just like thrown in without any like fanfare to talk about it. Just like watch like the compilation of best fights in the game. But they can't be the best fights in the game because you don't want to spoil those. Forget the icons
themselves. This is what I want to see.
Experience unparalleled real-time action combat. As Clive takes command of the iconic might coursing through his veins and shatters his very limits. The shining point of Final Fantasy 16, however, has to be the breathtaking icon versus icon battles.
I wonder how much of these are like cinematic versus mechanical.
I imagine they go probably through like sections where.
Yeah.
You do like this for a little while, and then you have like a cinematic part where they like come together and fight a bit, and then you back out and like do this again. Real time, allowing players to control their oh, they really want to focus on this like real time element.
Yeah. They're probably careful about it because a lot of people will just say, like Final Fantasy, that must be turn based, and then they'll get this and be like, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
Depending on the icon encountered, and every showdown is unique, right down to gameplay. Players will experience everything from a 3D scrolling shooter to a heavyweight wrestling match with devastating attacks that encompass the entire battlefield.
Uh-oh. So they have different mechanics in these battles.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That is really interesting.
These massive scale boss battles are entirely seamless, and I can promise you heart-stopping, controller-gripping excitement. I can't wait for you to get your hands on the game for yourself.
This game actually, am I interested in a Final Fantasy game? Maybe. The answer's not no.
Hey, there's worse ones to start it off with, I think.
Mm-hmm. Lots of things. I think with this kind of series, like, dude, this is the 15th one. Like, you cannot stress 16, about, like, 16. What you've missed. 16, yeah. And this is 16 in, like, numbered order. Yeah, exactly. This is just purely in the ones that are actually numbered.
It's like Panzer Dragoon or whatever.
Yeah. It's like Moltres versus Articuno.
Phoenix versus Bahamut, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Star Fox.
I feel like this game, like, I might actually really enjoy it if I were to just, like, mainline it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would, like, lose myself in it and get, like, bored if I did, like, all the side quests and stuff.
Yeah.
But to just mainline and kind of do these, like, cinematic boss battles and, like, beat the game in a relatively decent time.
That guy's wicked.
This looks like Tekken now. If you need that.
He's too powerful. He's transcended, like, the second half of his body. He doesn't need it. That
when you're so
awesome
powerful,
too.
The legs just wait. Yeah, this is like...
This is like
a God of War, like, climbing the Colossus, kind of.
It reminds me of Sonic. Like, you're running on the rails.
Sonic,
on the rails,
yeah.
Running up a ramp. It looks like a not insignificant amount of time that you're doing these things for, you know?
Well, that's, yeah, this is almost like drawing me in. Like, I like when games kind of, like, keep switching it up.
It's like Ratchet & Clank when you do the Clank levels and then you have the Spider-Bot levels. The scale is just massive, too. Like, look at how big this thing is that you're fighting. It's like that classic God of War feeling on the PS2 when you just those insanely huge titans.
I'm shocked by just how much they're showing us too. Like, what is left in the game to do outside of all of this?
Well, we're gonna
wow, that was a lot of damage.
Yeah.
So everyone, what did you think? Thank you for taking the time to join us.
You know
today.
What I think? Because I want that jacket. 16 will
be available. Mm-hmm. Dude, looks like he could be in Final Fantasy. June 22nd. Ooh.
That's the day we're seeing Bulma.
No, that's July 22nd. Oh, right, Volbeat. Right. So you could try to beat the game in a month before it's Volbeat time.
Yeah.
Also, I'm truly excited to finally be able to reveal that Final Fantasy 16's main theme was written and performed by one of Japan's greatest recording artists, Kenshi Yonezu. We've still got a lot more in store for you in the coming weeks, and I hope you all pre-order
a lot more in store
in
the coming weeks.
Alicia on release day. This has been
I don't know if I want to see more. Is
well, that was great. Yeah, you know what? I don't think I'm gonna watch anything else on this game now. Like even before we started recording, I was saying to you that I don't think I want to see. I don't even think I needed to see this to be excited to play this. But honestly, like, I don't know what more I need to see. Like I can't wait to play this game.
Yeah, like I needed to see this. I wasn't interested, and I genuinely think I am interested now. Like maybe not like day one playing this, but like you know, if you really like it and recommend it, and like I might eventually. Like, this is not something I'm gonna necessarily sleep on now after seeing this trailer. But I don't know if I want to see more because like
yeah,
that was a lot. That was cool, but like I think you run the risk of just being kind of like oversaturated, and like especially with a game that's really like spectacle focused. Like if I've seen, you know, half an hour of like the spectacle of the gameplay, then you know I've kind of like experienced it in a way, and I'm less excited to actually play the game and see more.
Yeah, and there's just nothing I want to know. Like I kind of have a feel of exactly how this is going to go now. You know, you're on the map, you're doing your things, you got your skill tree, you got the combat, like these different gameplay styles. Anything beyond that, I feel like I just want it to be a surprise. And I don't know. I don't think they'll show too much more than that. I think they'll just probably repackage the same information now. And it'll begin to be like a Deathloop situation as well as they mark it over and over. But it looks great to me. I can't wait. Folks, this brings us to the end of the podcast. Usually this is listener mail, but you already know we did that. So I guess there's nothing left to do than say thanks for listening. And I will see you next week because this has been Cloud Control, the gaming podcast. It's not just good, it's good enough. So see you on the next episode.